it's funny how in sports, right, we can root for people that we never even seen before, right, to work together, to win a game. We can't even root for the people that are in our communities,
yeah.
And we can't even try to reach out to them for my own type of teamwork so we can win. Like, we want people to win championships that are making millions of dollars a year. There's nothing wrong with that. Why can't we embrace that within our own communities, within our own household?
This episode of the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast is brought to you by Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation, by A.R. Morton. Black America, Inc. is a piece of literature that details and illustrates the socioeconomic solutions that Black Americans can implement in their communities today. Whether it be being captains of our own industries, creating our own political parties, or just learning how to strengthen our overall health and wealth, Black America, Inc. is what Black Americans and Americans in general need to get to the next level in 2017 and beyond. For too many years, we have been talking about the problems and not the solutions. For too many years, we've been pointing fingers at each other without talking about the solutions. This is why Black America, Inc. is important. If you're ready to build yourself up and rebuild your community, head on over to Amazon.com and order your copy of Black America, Inc., a $1 trillion nation.
My name is Andre C. Hatchett, a.k.a. Mr. Own or Be Owned, and I'm encouraging everybody listening to this podcast to pick up my new book, Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America, on Amazon.com. If you're a black man, if you need guidance, inspiration, a path to follow to build wealth in this country, pick it up. Own or Be Owned, The Black Man's Guide to Wealth Creation in America.
Welcome to the Tide Capital Millionaire Podcast with your host, Charles Oglesby III, a.k.a. Tide Millionaire.
So this is the Tide Capital Podcast. This is the Millionaire Podcast, episode number 48. My name is Charles Oglesby. You guys all know me. Also go by Tide Millionaire on Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club that has over 200 members. We're going into year 2.5. We're doing some great things with that. We're doing some great things on the real estate side through Tide Acquisitions. Looking to do property 2 and 3 for the next month. And then also Tide Ventures, which is looking to do some really cool stuff with HBCUs. We've already reached out to a lot, got a lot of very, very solid feedback, which is awesome. Got better response than we thought we would get just off of that first round of emails and letters. So very cool stuff is going on. Thank you all for tuning in. The purpose of this show is to share the stories of successful African-American business owners and investors so that people can see that business and investing are the keys to financial success and generational wealth. With us today, we have Mr. Anthony. He goes by Financial Lituation on Instagram, and I think on Twitter too. He's very well known in the personal finance and the self-development and that whole guru kind of community on Instagram, which is very cool. And so I figured that I had to get him on the show, had to get some of his knowledge to share with you guys, help improve you guys' lives and build a better community for millennials and specifically African-American millennials. So with that, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Charles, for having me.
So can you tell us more about your background?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Harlem, New York. I am in Philadelphia now, and I moved here to go to Temple University, where I studied accounting. When I got here, I was like, I need to be in the business school because this is my passion. I love, you know, everything about money, and I want to become more aware of that field. So I chose accounting. Actually, my major was accounting, and I had a minor in finance. And before I even started classes, I was like, all right, I think this is going to be a little bit too much. So I just stuck with accounting. After graduation, I did a few years of AmeriCorps, and right now I work for the city of Philadelphia in financial services.
It's very cool because I did the reverse. My undergrad degree is in finance with a minor in accounting. And when I was an undergrad, the guy told me, he was like, you know, I didn't take his advice. He said, get a degree in accounting and punt the finance, because you can do finance with a degree in accounting, but you can't do accounting with a degree in finance. And he was right. And it kind of shows with you working in finance with a degree in accounting, right?
It's pretty cool experience, man. I love finance. I love personal finance, and I also love accounting as well. And those two things kind of like go hand in hand. So I love what I do.
They definitely do. I'm super passionate about the accounting field. The lady who was on the show last week, she's also an accounting person. My mom's an accounting person. So
nice.
Very cool. Very cool. So financial lituation. What does that mean, man?
So financial lituation. So lituation is a hip hop term that was derived from a rapper named Fabulous. He came out with a song called Lituation. And it's really, you know, the word, it comes out from the word situation. Lituation is just an amped up version. I came up with that name because I thought it would be a cool concept, because when you talk about financial literacy, it kind of go hand in hand with, you know, literacy, like lituation and literacy. So I can always use that lit and finlit in terms of, you know, spreading the message for my generation.
So what are you looking to do with that financial lituation brand? What's the aim there?
I'm still discovering that each and every day. But my goal is really to try to tackle video. I listen to a lot of Gary Vee, and video and voice is really the present and the future. I believe that is really going to be a part of financial lituation in terms of messaging for my generation. And you know, a lot of people today, especially millennials, they like to get straight to the point when it comes to content and material that they consume each and every day. And books, don't get me wrong, books are very important, but people like to see things that are like up in their face. Like, they want to get to the point as soon as possible. And I feel like with video and voice, that's really the key to spreading the message for this generation.
Cool. So when we talked about you coming on the show, you said you want to talk about goals. You want to talk about 2018 goals. What does that look like?
So 2018 goals, a lot of us have resolutions, man. And every year in December, we come up with, you know, these thoughts in our heads about how next year is going to be my year, right? We love to talk about the year. We love to talk about the year in advance, about how it's going to be my year. But we never put a concrete plan in place on how the year is going to go, right? We never put anything on paper, anything written. It's just like, oh, you know, we think that the year is just going to automatically happen for us just because we put it out in the universe. But we fail to take those action steps that will get us to where we need to go. And I feel like 2018 can be a lot of people's years if they just, you know, start with a goal. I say this all the time. People don't save, people don't invest, people don't start an emergency fund or pay down debt because they don't have any written goals in place. And I feel like that's one of the first steps in order to tackle things. You know, just saying I want to be debt free, just saying I want to save more, just saying I want to invest more is not going to get to that next level.
I think that I took from Grant Cardone, actually, is the idea of writing down your goals. He does it in the beginning of the day and at night. I do it at least once when I get to the office. I write down all my goals. Mm-hmm. What I really like doing is writing my goals on my whiteboard so then I can see them. Nice. What I really like doing, except I got married, my wives don't let you do this, but I like writing my goals on the mirror. I think that's a super hack because you're always looking at yourself in the mirror. So even if you don't look at the goal, if you're looking at yourself, you subconsciously see the goal.
Yeah,
so I think it's.
I like that. I see Diddy does that. Right, you know, write inspirational messages on his mirror in his bathroom, and I see a lot of people, a lot of people who do that, which is very inspiring. And I wish I could do that. My mirror is tiny, so I don't have a big mirror to be writing on.
Yeah, I think that anything Diddy does, people should probably.
Yeah. he's definitely a boss, definitely a GOAT, man, in the industry.
I was reading something, and he was talking about he has like a spiritual goal, a financial goal, all these different goals. What's your advice for somebody looking to set the proper goals?
I think it's key to break them down into different buckets. I feel like your spiritual goals and your personal goals should be first. I would make that suggestion for it to be first, because that would dictate how you move in terms of your financial goals. So I feel like that's really key. And it's crazy that you broke them down into buckets, because I did that. I wrote my goals down for 2018 a few days ago, and I broke them down into personal, spiritual, financial, and also business goals. So I think it's very important to break them down into buckets and start with the core of who you are first, and then it will translate into the financial aspect of your life.
So specifically in terms of financial goals, are we thinking like savings goals, investment goals, credit goals? Yes.
So for financial goals, definitely suggests people to look at what's in front of them, right? So if it's in terms of, I want to pay down my credit card debt, all right? In order for you to pay down your credit card debt, you have to understand how much you owe, right? So therefore, I have to take that step of you know, printing out statements to see how can I get there based on what I make right now and based on the income that I have right now. What can I do to pay this down each month and set a deadline, an ultimate deadline for when you want that specific credit card bill to be paid off?
Absolutely.
And I would recommend, of course, the sooner, you know, the better, especially with credit card debt, when the average interest rate is anywhere from between 15% and 24%. So you want to make sure that's done with as soon as possible. In terms of your personal savings goals, if you want to travel someplace, you know, research how much it costs to get to that place you want to travel and work on a plan to save every month for that specific trip, you know, for that flight and for, you know, your lodging, whether that be Airbnb or whether that be a hotel, and make sure you incorporate food and make sure you incorporate attraction, like tourist attractions. So I feel like breaking things down, you have your buckets and then you break them down into different things. So
nice. Yeah, it's funny because a lot of times people see that vacation and they'll say like, oh, that vacation costs $2,000. If you break it down and you consistently aim towards that, you're not like waking up at December, you're saying, oh, I need to go on that trip, now I got to pull $2,000 out of savings. Like, no, like you set aside a sinking fund. Oh, it's my mom, like you need sinking fund. So you set up that account, you get that account a name, every single month you pay it like a bill, $100, yeah. $200. And then also you said about, you're talking about like paying off credit card debt. And what I did that works is I created a binder and I created a section and all the statements I put inside that binder. And so I could always glance and see, okay, oh, this person, this person, this person, this person. And then I had a big summary spreadsheet at the front that basically had the whole thing listed. So I was just going through, just checking it like, that's paid, that's paid, that's paid, that's paid. And so I think that it's really about being systematic, being organized, and really being intentional about improving your financial life. It's like, you can't just wing it, man. You hope it works out.
Systems are so important. Like, I love what you do because it helps you track each and every credit card. You know, you're tracking it, and at the same time, you get to celebrate when you pay off certain things. So it brings you joy in the process of tracking. Some people don't like to just face, you know, the reality of the situation. But when you face it and you work towards a specific goal, that will bring you joy, you know?
So what is a financial goal that you set in 2017 or any time in life, a big financial goal that you accomplished? And how did you accomplish that goal?
This year, I've had a goal to save a specific amount in each of my buckets. So I have a emergency account, which I call a no worries fund, you know. So if something happens, I don't have any, no worries. I have a travel fund. I have a business account. And I have an investing account where I put money in for short term when I want to buy individual stocks. So I have different accounts. In the beginning of the year, I set how much I want to put in each bucket in terms of where I wanted to travel to, in terms of how much I wanted to save for an emergency. I'm blessed to not have that many expenses. 26 years old, I still live with roommates, one of my best friends I live with now. My expenses are really low. You know, that's a part of my plan in order to get where I want to be. So I think it's really key to sit down with how much you make and work your way from there in terms of setting goals and how much you want to save.
It's so funny because I think that getting your expenses low is so key, because it sucks.
The most important thing in the world.
And have all your money go to bills. And when you start making money and it goes to you, it's motivating. It's like, man, like, of course I'll work that extra whatever. Of course I'll do this business, because every single dollar goes to you now. It's just a different kind of motivation. It's motivating when you're making money for the purpose of improving your life or saving money or stacking money, as opposed to just making it for the rent. That's when people kind of bare bones it.
And it's so crazy. I just said this today. I said, I don't understand how people really think that their job, like their workplace, the salary that they get from their job is just to pay bills. They look for a job to simply pay bills, right? And then they try to look for more money, right, as it relates to a raise or another job, to pay more bills, to get into more debt. It's just baffling to me. But it's something that we need to address, especially, you know, in our communities. There's another way, right? You can reimagine freedom, what freedom looks like. And that's what I try to do with financial situation, you know, 67, which is our, you know, my retirement age, that doesn't have to be the case, right? You know, if we start working as soon as possible towards that freedom. That's just a benchmark in terms of when people should retire to receive, you know, Social Security benefits and stuff like that. That doesn't have to be. You know, we can live our best lives, you know, as soon as possible, but we have to be willing to put in the work.
There's a lot to talk about there. A lot of, like Ashley Fox, she says, retirement isn't when you don't work. Retirement is when you don't have to work. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you position yourself financially at 40, you can still be like Oprah, and Oprah still works. There's a lot of people who don't have to work. So it's like, I think that you have to kind of reshift a lot of thinking. A lot of people have to reshift their thinking instead of thinking like, I'm just going to like live and die, pay bills until I die. And then when I turn 62, then they'll let me just like make enough money to pay more bills.
The people who are six, like everyone still works, no matter where you are financially, you still work. You're going to be working forever. But the thing about it is how much work you put in is the key. And also, is it work that you really enjoy doing, right? Because some of us, we're working jobs that we don't love doing just to pay bills that we don't love either. It's just crazy. Like, Diddy still works, Oprah still works, right? But their work is on a different level. They're not working hard. They have a team that's helping them out, but they put themselves in the position to be that, you know, for it to be that way. And also, they're doing something that they love to do,
yeah.
Right? It's not like, oh, it's Monday. Oh, I can't wait till Friday. Oh, it's Monday again. Mm-hmm. Like, no, that's not what's going through their mind.
Yeah.
They're happy to get up each and every day because they're doing something they genuinely love.
Yeah. I think that's a big part of, first and foremost, I want to say that it's different. Working when you're the boss is different than working when you're an employee. Mm-hmm. So when you show up and somebody's giving you orders, it's a lot different than when you show up and you're giving the orders. You have somebody getting you coffee, you have somebody making copies for you. But also, I want to say that I think that's why I preach the idea of financial freedom. And Jim Rome says this, and a few other people say this, it's like you have to become financially free as soon as possible so then you can do the work you love. So it's like a lot of people have it backwards. They're doing what they love and they get older. And now they're trying to figure out like, how am I going to pay the bills? Like you spend all that time playing, man. At some point you had to put your nose to the grindstone. Mm-hmm. It's either going to be college. It's either going to be your 25 to 30 years before you get kids. But at some point you can't get away from it. I have a sister who, she didn't go to college when she got straight out of high school. She played, but now she's putting her nose to the grindstone. At some point in time, it's going to happen. I think that one thing we were talking about is not having a lot of expenses. And I want to go back to there just because I think that a lot of people have to really get this. I was reading this book and he was talking about how this guy, he accumulated savings to become a capitalist by denying himself certain luxuries or whatever. And so it's a story about these fishermen, they could catch one fish per day. And so what he did is instead of catching that, they would catch a fish per day, they would eat that fish, and they'd have to go back to work the next day to catch another fish because the fish only lasted one day. And so it's kind of like getting you in this mentality of like a paycheck mentality. So what he did is he starved himself for one day and he spent that day building a net. That net allowed him to catch two fish per day. And so then going forward, he was a fish to keep and a fish to eat. And so he started accumulating reserves and he used his basically capital. The net was the capital. And so what I take from that is people, what I never really thought of is like you have to sacrifice something, not just your time, but you have to sacrifice your finances. And so you have to deny yourself the vacations. You have to deny yourself the going out to eat, deny yourself the newest, freshest Jordans, the newest iPhone while you stack. And there's going to be everybody else out there getting that new, fly, flashy stuff. But if you want to get out of the paycheck to paycheck race, you have to deny yourself. And I never looked at it like that, but it just made a whole lot of sense.
I don't really preach deprivation. I feel like people can find balance in what they do. The thing about it is people don't know balance, right? They just go all out on one end. And that one end is just complete debt. So if you know that you don't make a certain amount, right? It's just like that all-in debt situation shouldn't be maybe for you. Like I'm gonna just say that. And it's all about balance because I don't want you to be so focused on paying something down that you don't live your life and you're living your life down, right? Because you're focused so much on paying something down, so you don't have any great experiences in terms of like, you know, taking a nice trip. You know, that may be expensive, but I'm not saying take, you know, a trip every single month, especially trips that you can't afford, but treat yourself nice sometimes. A lot of people just be going off on the deep end. You know, they are not making great decisions.
So what are some strategies that you think would help people get their expenses lower?
I feel like for the millennial crowd, I know, is looked down upon in years prior. But if you could live home with your parents until you get your financial bearings, I feel like that's a good start. If you don't want to do that, find roommates, people that you can trust, you know, to live with, to share the expenses that you have. Like for me personally, I don't have cable, but I do have Netflix. I have an Xfinity account that I share with someone. Those are alternatives to like something like cable, right? Instead of paying $170-something a month, I can watch movies on Netflix, and I have an Xfinity account where I could watch cable, you know, basically for free. You know, it's all about using your resources.
It's like being thoughtful about how you're going to do things instead of just going about it
exactly
how everybody else does.
And the key thing is just teamwork, right? Having roommates is an example of participating in teamwork because you all are sharing expenses until you feel comfortable and get your financial bearings together, right? Or someone sharing a Netflix account. So I think that's key for our community to embrace teamwork, because a lot of times we want to do things on our own because we want to be the boss. We want to make sure everyone thinks we're the boss, right? So if we have this house to ourselves that we can't afford, is my house, I don't share with anyone. Just think of the whole ride sharing thing with Uber and Lyft. Teamwork.
I always tell people that people complain about like generational wealth that other people have. Mm-hmm. All generational wealth is teamwork.
Exactly.
Somebody, instead of them using up all their resources for them, they did something so that you can live well. Yeah. You can do the same thing for your kids or your brother and your sister.
And it's crazy because I just posted about teamwork the other day and I said, it's funny how in sports, right, we can root for people that we've never even seen before, right, to work together, to win a game. We can't even root for the people that are in our communities,
yeah,
and we can't even try to reach out to them for my own type of teamwork so we can win. Like, we want people to win championships that are making millions of dollars a year. There's nothing wrong with that. Why can't we embrace that within our own communities, within our own household?
I never looked at teamwork in regards to decreasing expenses, but I definitely looked at it in regards to leverage and allowing you to do more. It's so crazy because, I mean, the idea of group economics is another idea of teamwork. Teamwork, and I didn't know this conversation was going to go this way, but that's something I advocate. I mean, the slogan for my company is business and investing are a team sport. And in the book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, he talks about how like individuals lose because they go out there and they compete against people who compete as teams. So it's like, we're the only people trying to do it by ourselves.
By ourselves, like, yeah.
Why would we lose? Because you're by yourself, man. You're hopping out there trying to be strong and independent, trying to leave the house and show you're a man. I think that that's huge. I mean, you said live with your parents. And I think that a lot of times people will live with their parents until they can afford to rent. I think that's wrong. I think you live with your parents until you can afford to own, but own strategically, whereas you're putting down more than 3.5%. You're putting down 20-25% on that house, on a house that's the right size. Or going in with your friends to do all these different things. People going in as teams to buy homes and take down properties. That's what other communities do. They'll go and it'll be multiple families going to buy that one property, that multifamily property. And so then everybody will live in their own unit and they'll pay off that property. Everybody will hustle and pay off that property. And then everybody eats. And so it's like, I'm really big on sacrifice and on denying yourself and all these different things. And I think that you have to kind of, my balance is the little things that I give myself as rewards for accomplishing goals. But I think that if anybody takes anything from this like small stint of the conversation, it's that teamwork is everything, man. That's what they say, that teamwork is the best credit score you ever have. Teamwork makes the dream work. And I made this comparison a while back where I was talking about like how the Golden State Warriors play basketball, how it's not necessarily the Steph Curry show. It's everybody gets their touch. Everybody gets their shot up. Everybody gets to be a part of the offense. And then at the end, everybody wins. I think the headline for this show is going to be teamwork. It's so, if we can just get that, we've done so much through the investment club, just through teamwork in 1 year. And I always tell people, like, in 10 years, imagine what we can do. And the crazy part about it is when you work as a team, people don't have to work as hard. We work as an individual. As an individual, you got to go all in, 120. Maybe it's not healthy. Maybe it's not even possible. But if, like, you start working together with other people, everybody pitches in a little turns into a lot. I always tell people that, like, LeBron is a great basketball player, but he's only one player. It's like, imagine if LeBron was out there talking about he's the best player ever. He doesn't need no team. He'd go out there and lose every single game. And in the community, you have a lot of people who might be LeBron, but they still need team members. And it's like Claude Anderson says, he's like, for some reason, we glorify the accomplishments of the individual instead of the accomplishments of the group. So it has to be focused on the group. It has to be focused on the team. It's like, if I'm winning, but you're losing, I'm not winning. We need to be winning.
And that's why I'm a huge Knicks fan, you know? I'm a huge Knicks fan. And we had Carmelo for the past years. It was just like the Carmelo show.
Yeah.
Right? And when he went to OKC, you know, some Knicks fans were like, oh my God, he left. I was actually happy. I felt like he put in his time, but it was just like, you know, the pressure was just put on him to make the team better.
Yeah.
And he couldn't hold the team by himself. Just look at someone like LeBron James. When he was with Cleveland, in the beginning, he couldn't hold the team by himself. Like they did their thing, but he still needed players, key players around him to make better moves. And that's why he went to Miami, to be surrounded by teammates who would help him with his vision.
One thing that I always tell, there's this book called The Jewish Phenomenon, and it talks about how I always draw comparisons to Jewish people. People don't like it, people hate it, but I feel like in certain regards, they went through a similar sort of disenfranchisement in America, and they had to kind of overcome that. So I look at strategies they use to overcome that. And one of the strategies that they use is they're not necessarily looking for one person in that community to be the savior. They're not looking for an Obama. Everybody feels like it's their obligation to be Obama. And so you can't have people who are necessarily pulling you down, because if I have everybody in my family waiting on me to succeed, I'm like LeBron out there in Cleveland trying to carry the whole team. I need people who are going to come alongside me and run with me, who are going to hustle alongside me and hustle with me, not who are waiting, go Charles, go. You're gonna save us, man. Because maybe I will, maybe I won't. But the odds are so much better if I'm running and he's running and he's running and she's running, and we're just passing each other the ball. Somebody's going to hit a shot.
Teamwork is definitely important, especially to our communities. And I hope from now, in 2018 and years to come, we can really hone in on that concept and really like move it forward, you know, because our spending power is excellent. We know how to come together to spin. We know how to come together to spin on things that's not necessarily for us. But when it comes to helping each other, it's like kind of there's a lack and disconnect there. So
what are your thoughts on the current economic environment as it pertains to millennials?
So I read a lot of articles. I read, you know, CNN, MarketWatch, Bloomberg, and it's just like, I see you get a lot of articles that say millennials are savers, and then you see articles that say, oh, millennials are not savers, or they're killing this industry and that industry. So you get mixed like reviews from different things. And the thing about statistics is that statistics are really like concentrated in a specific environment or capturing like the whole demographic of millennials. I think one thing, millennials are definitely experiential. Like, we love our experiences, you know, nice, you know, good trips to Miami and Dubai and all the, you know, those places. But we do have a hard time saving. We do have a hard time investing. Our mindset is just not there all the way. And I'm kind of like, I think it's important for our generation to really experience the world. But I think we have to also think about our future, because that's important. Your future is going to sneak up on you any day now. Yeah. So it's important to really, you know, get key personal finance concepts down pat, so you could do more of that traveling and more of the things that you love to do.
This is Ken Morris, the CEO and founder of Multibex, the private equity investment firm, and the creator of the brand Lord of My Land, the Alpha Gentleman Entrepreneur. And I am a proud supporter of Tide Capital. You can find me on Instagram at Lord of My Land and at The Lord Ken.
This is Charles Oglesby, also known as Todd Millionaire, host of the Millionaire Podcast, and I'm the founder and the director of the Tide Capital Investment Club that now has over 200 members, Tide Acquisitions, which is our crowdfunded real estate firm, and Tide Ventures, our crowdfunded venture capital firm. I am formally inviting you to join one of our many investment clubs. If you are someone who is new to investing, a seasoned investor, or someone who doesn't even know what investing is, we know that you will learn the key to investing and how to build generational wealth through the use of crowdfunding by working with our team. Email info@capitaltod.com to join today. It's funny because I always say that I think that for some reason we try to squeeze so much into that 20 to 30 year, that 10 year stint. And it's like Gary Vee says, he says, like, life is long. He's like 40. He said, I'm 40 and I feel like I'm 20. He's like, if people realize that, like, you can still do great things at 40, they wouldn't try to rush so many things and squeeze so much into things. Yeah. Wrote a blog about that. And I was saying, like, man, I wish when I was like your age or maybe less, maybe younger, when I was like 23, fresh out of school, I wish that I would have been gobbling up real estate at that time instead of just living life. I just lived a life at that point in time. I was in college. I had struggled through college and I felt like, okay, now is my time to ball out. And so I balled out. And I was watching a Gary Vee episode like 2 days ago and he was saying, like, you might think it's your time to ball out. Like, now it's really your time to go in. Oh, it's really like it's your time. Like, you ate dirt for 4 years, now ate dirt for another 4 years. You look up at 30, you'll be untouchable. And so it's like, that's kind of where I am now. It's like, yeah, I ate dirt to get through law school, all that stuff. And now it's like, I could party now or I can get back in the lab. Yeah. So what are some things you think that millennials should be doing now to make the next 10 years look better for them?
A lot of millennials are coming out with brands, right? You see a lot of people starting businesses. I think that is wonderful. I think it's great. I've been on the wave of entrepreneurship since I was in high school, and to see so many motivated millennials tap into the world of entrepreneurship is amazing. And I think in order for them to move forward, they need to try to capitalize on that entrepreneurship, you know, that expertise that they have, so they can pay down debt, right? And they can save and things like that. And I love social media now because everyone's connecting with each other, creating this space, this safe space to, like, you know, collaborate and things like that. So I think the important thing now is just to really, you know, further embrace teamwork as it relates to, you know, saving, and you're involved in real estate and investing, you know, in mutual funds and things like that, and understanding that this is not about just now. Mm-hmm. This is about building a legacy, and that's important.
I think what's really cool about what you said about entrepreneurship is I read this book. Everything is a book. It's either a book or a podcast. I read this book called Rich 20-something. And he was talking about how you have these skills, you work this job, you get paid for whatever you do, contract drafting, you get paid to analyze whatever. And then in your after hours, you can work as a consultant to basically do the same thing you'd be doing on your job, but you can get paid at consulting rates, not at your hourly wage rate. And so for that kind of goes hand in hand with something I heard Eric Thomas say. And he was saying, like, you use your intellectual property and your intellectual capital to pay off your student loan. So it's like you baseline your job. I'm not expecting a job to save me because I know it won't. I know it's not. And it's not, I was to my mom, like, it's not even like they don't hate me. It's just not profitable to pay you what you will be making on the open market. And they're business owners, so they have to pay what they pay you. They don't hate you. It's just business.
And jobs are not designed to make you wealthy. Yep. That's your job. Exactly. Your job is to use the resource that they give you to make whatever happens.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it's like you do that between your hours of, I think Gary Vee says, from like 7
he says from 7 to 2.
Yeah. And so it's like you can do a lot of work between 7 and 2. You can do a lot of work on a Saturday. You can do a lot of work on a Sunday evening.
Yep. Think about all the all-nighters that people had in college.
Yep.
Like, you slaved in college nights, you know, studying for an exam, you know, just to get an A. And I feel like we should use that same drive to do, you know, as it relates to our goals and our vision endeavors. So I think that's key.
Now that I'm out of school, I feel like it's like impossible to not be successful in America. If you have 24 hours with social media, with the ability to sell products online, you have Shopify, you can do webinars, you can sell books. There's so much opportunity out there to create products and sell products and promote a brand. It's just, what are you doing with it? Are you using it to promote a brand? Are you using it for nonsense? Because social media is just a vessel. It's like, what are you going to fill that vessel with? You're going to fill it with substance. You're going to fill it with butt pictures.
Gary Vee talks about it all the time. Like, social media that we have is just, it's a jewel right now. It's for our generation. Like, the word of mouth thing is still relevant, but social media can spread to millions and millions of people in 1 second.
I like Twitter, because Twitter is one of the rare social media platforms where somebody can take your content and then share your content to their followers. And so you just immediately doubled your market. And then they'll share it again, you just tripled your market, you quadrupled your market. Twitter is a huge tool. A lot of people, I don't know if they like Twitter. There's a lot of negative downsides to Twitter, but it's a huge asset. I mean, I was watching this Grant Cardone. It was an old video, like 2015. He was like, I just want to thank God for social media. He was like, social media changed my life because it just broadcasts you to the whole world. And what's really cool about social media is it allows you to be your true self. I feel like things that I talk about on social media are not things I would talk to my friends about, which might be not a good thing. Maybe I need better friends. But it's true. Like, you're your 100% authentic self. And so you go out and you find somebody who believes what you believe and they become a part of your tribe. And I mean, I've done that just with the podcast. It's just bringing on people who believe what I believe. They become my friends. Who knows what we're going to do in the future? I know we have already done in the future. Shifting gears, I want to talk about some more current events and something that's really hot and popular these days. And I know you know what I'm talking about. And it wasn't always like this, but for some reason, everybody's talking Bitcoin. Everybody's talking cryptocurrency. And for people like me, who are like traditional investors, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, real estate, savings accounts, CDs, all that stuff, crypto makes no sense. But to the newbies, they're like, it's the future, it's this, it's that. And you're a finance guy. I don't know if you're super deep in the Kool-Aid, but I mean, what's your take on crypto?
Cryptos can be very tempting for anyone. And it's definitely succeeded in a lot of our communities. You know, it takes a lot to really understand cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Like I say all the time, like I understand stocks, right? I understand bonds because I will call those an investment. Those are investments, right? To me, I wouldn't really call Bitcoin an investment per se, right? Because when I invest in stocks, when I invest in bonds, right, I am lending money to a company, I'm lending money to a city, you know, a government, for them to do specific work, for them to enhance something, for them to innovate a product or a service. I know I'm investing in a vision, right? I'm believing in something. With cryptocurrency, I can't really say that. It's just I'm investing in popularity instead of product, seeing a product, you know, come to fruition. I'm investing in just the hype of it. And when I see people in my communities who never invested in anything speak about cryptocurrency, it's just like, wow, this is really getting out of hand. Some of these people be like, oh, I don't understand the stock market. I don't understand how to invest in the stocks. Where do I start? You know, who should I research? You know, what stock should I begin to invest in? When this cryptocurrency craze happened, you're like really putting all of your money inside of this thing that you really don't understand because you think is a quick come up. And I was just talking to someone today. Bitcoin is basically, it's like playing a lottery, right? You're just putting your money into something just to see, you know, if you can make a quick come up, right? And don't get me wrong, like, obviously there have been some success, right? People have been making money with this thing. And I feel like there's a lot of short-term gains that can happen with the cryptocurrency. But if you don't know when to, you don't know the moves and you don't know when to get out, yeah, kind of crazy.
So why do you think it's so appealing to like those people who have never invested before? Why are they so motivated about crypto?
Crypto can move like 6,000 to, you know, 20,000 in 8 hours. And you see, like, this is meme going around where this guy is just chilling. He was like, when you invested $25 and you make $8 investing in Bitcoin, like people want that quick money, and they keep that money in there because they don't really, like, if you never invested anything before, right, and you don't have a strategic plan when you're investing, because when you're investing in anything, whether it be short term or long term, you're gonna have a plan, right? Some of these people don't have any type of plan at all. They're just putting their money and hoping that their money, they're gonna make millions in 2 seconds by investing just $25, yeah, which is absurd. And then you wind up losing all of the money that you invested because you didn't even know what you were doing in the first place.
So how do you think this ends? Is it tough to really call, or what do you think?
I have no idea. I mean, it's crazy because I love the concept, right? I love the concept of cryptocurrency. I love it. But in order for it to succeed, I feel like it needs to get some more backing, and it also needs to be, you know, be used in places. You know, like if I go to a restaurant, I need to be able to use Bitcoin, you know, or Litecoin. I always call it Litcoin, Ethereum or whatever. I think it just needs to be more acceptable, yeah, you know, in order for it to succeed. And a lot of people just don't understand it. I feel like it needs to be broken down because it can be really confusing too.
One of the things, yeah, a lot of times people, they look at charts when they're investing. And the chart that stood out to me is that chart that looks like the tulip bubble chart. And so it's like, what scared me about that is like, it goes like here and it just goes up. And so it's like, to me, I see that as a warning sign, whereas everybody else might see it as opportunity, like, dang, it went from this to this. And I think that people should be very leery when the purpose and the point of you investing in something is because it's made money. Like, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that I'm investing in something because now it's worth $20,000. Like, what's supporting all that? Exactly. What's the basis for all of that? And if there is none, then you're gambling. I feel like people are just kind of picking horses right now. So they're like, I'm going on the red horse. I'm going on blue pony. And I think that if people become more educated on it and it starts to make sense, then it could make sense as an actual investment, but it's not an investment. I think that's why a lot of people kind of get frustrated when you have people talking about the returns they're getting. And it's like, it's not the same. It's like a lottery winner saying, oh, I invested $1 in this ticket and I made $1 million. My return on investment is 1,000,000%. Like, it's 1,000,000%, but can you repeat it? Can you give advice on somebody else to make it? Or is it just a big coin flip?
And that's definitely true. Yeah. It's crazy because I live currently in North Philadelphia, and just walking down the street, when you hear people who haven't invested in stocks and people who really haven't invested in themselves, right, that much, and they talk about Bitcoin and all you heard about what Bitcoin went up to today, you know, it's at 20,000 today. Oh, have you invested in it? And I'm like, this is definitely getting out of hand.
That's like a warning sign for me. I always tell somebody, I was like, if the shoe shine boy is out here giving financial advice, I don't want it. I was like, even if I miss out, I'm still like, I'm not, and I always tell people, like, I'm not just not doing anything. We're still buying stocks. We're still finding opportunity in the stock market. We're still buying opportunities in real estate and business and all those different things. We're not just sitting on our hands. You got to be careful who you get your advice from. And I don't want the cab driver giving me financial advice. If he was that brilliant, he wouldn't be driving the cab. So I'm gonna ask you a few quick questions, just kind of throw off like 3 points. So what are 3 tips that you would give on home ownership?
One of the first tips I would give is really, what is your goal, right? Let's start there. What is your goal when you start looking at places where you want to live? Do you see yourself being in there for the long term, right? I'm a city person, so home ownership is not really a goal of mine. Number two, I would think just coming up with a realistic budget in terms of how much can you afford to put down. A lot of people are trying to get their credit straight, and that's important when we talk about home ownership. But if you don't have any cash saved up, and you haven't created a budget for it, it's like kind of like, what's the point of getting into something where you're going to get into more debt? And I feel like number three would just be, do you see, like personally, if I have a home, I want my kids to be able to live there in the long term as well. And if you see that that's a place where family's being started there, I feel like, you know, that's something that you could look into as well.
What are some tips on budgeting?
Well, the first thing is to know how much you make exactly. Some of us, we get checks every 2 weeks and we say we make around something, right? We tell people, oh, I make about $80,000 a year. Or we tell people that they make $80,000 a year, but it's really probably like, you know, $76,000. But we don't really know how much we make per check, right? Mm-hmm. We don't know that exact figure, and I feel like that's key. The second thing is to write down, know your expenses, write them down, and try to, you know, really get that in order and compare that to how much you make.
Tips on paying off debt.
It's important to make double payments. That's extremely important. Don't listen to what the minimum balance say. Right? I tell people all the time, credit cards will tell you minimum balance payment is $25 to $35. Pay more than that. That $25, $35 is only simply just to avoid a late fee, but you're still going to be accruing interest if the bill is past due. So it's important to double payments on your credit card bills in order to effectively pay them off as soon as possible.
That's a good point. And I think that the same should be true if you're talking about a car note or you're talking about even a house. It's like, if you position yourself so that the payment is able to be made twice on your car, on your house, that's a stronger financial play. Even if you have to drive less of a car, it's like I was telling my wife, like, yeah, we can live fly and flashy, but we need some excess. And so it's like,
and the key thing is we need to stop listening or putting dates in our heads that companies give us, right? So your student loan provider may say, you're going to pay off this debt by 2025 based on their calculation, based on you making a minimum payment on, you know, the amount that they tell you to make, right? Don't listen to dates, right? Create your own date, create your own goal, a realistic goal that you want to see that debt paid off. Same thing with mortgages, right? We give you 15 or 30. It's all about what we receive and what we make our own, right? Don't pay attention to what you receive. You know, try to make your own out of it. You know, like we talked about earlier about retirement, you know, we think that, you know, it has to be 67 years old, right? Create your own retirement, create your own time you want to pay off your debt, you know, create your own dates. And I feel like that's important.
It's true, because I mean, a lot of times those dates serve their interests, not yours. And so it's like, by taking all that time to pay off your debt, you're paying them interest. And so the longer you take to pay off the debt, the more interest you pay them. So it's like, the shorter you can get that time. And the crazy part about it is, like, your mortgage or your car note is the minimum payment. So if you can look at a credit card balance, you can see, oh, if I pay you $25, I'll pay this off in 10 years. The same thing is true for your car note. That's the minimum payment. You can pay more. You can pay $100, $200 more. I know people who have had homes on 30-year mortgages, and they get to year 15 and they look at their statement and they realize they've made a dent in their principal. Like, they've just been paying interest for the last 15 years. You're paying rent to the bank. You think you're a homeowner, but you're really you're a tenant of the bank.
Like, I tell people all the time, you don't own anything unless you paid that debt off. You don't own that car. You don't own that house until that debt is paid off, because that thing could be taken away from you any day if you fail to make a payment. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm going to wrap this up. It's getting kind of late, but I know there's so much more that we could talk about. Let's plan to do some more of these. We could do like a topic show, or we can do whatever. Because I think that what I liked about what I saw, I was watching your credit talk, and it makes sense, but it's not what everybody hears. And so you get all this advice about, like, get your credit score up and what's your credit score, and we don't realize, like, a credit score is just a license to go into debt. And it's like, you'd be better off getting your assets up. And so you kind of inspire me to write that post. And I know that we have to kind of shift our thinking, because if we just do what we're sold, we're going to be slaves. So if you do the work 40 hours, retire, you're never going to live your fullest life. And so we have to break out of those confines. We have to break out of what we've been taught, what we've been told, and create new paradigms, create new things that we want to do that are going to allow us to actually flourish instead of just exist. So with that, this is episode number 48. Do you have any last words for the people?
I would just like to say thank you so much for having me on. I think we had a great conversation, and I really appreciate this.
Very cool. Very cool. So this is Charles Ogilvie, also known as Top Millionaire. This is episode number 48. We're doing great things in 2018. We're actually ending off 2017 with a bang, because somebody told me not to wait until 2018. So we're going hard in these last few weeks of 2017. I recommend that you get on board now, not wait until 2018. You can do so by emailing us at info@capitaltod.com. The website is capitaltod.com. As always, this is Charles Ogilvie, also known as Top Millionaire, signing off.